because it involves a lot of very interesting historical intrigue. In addition to like how this custom sort of developed, so I thought it'd be interesting in general, even if one is not one to wear the kippah.
Because I'm wondering why some person in a foreign European country wears a red one.
Why someone wears a red one?
In a foreign European country.
I had a professor in.
Yes, thank you.
Yes. I had a professor who I was very close with, who's a theologian, and he's friends with a lot of Christian theologians, and someone gave him a cardinal cap as a gift once. And he, like, wears it at home just as a joke. It looks like it's like a red kippah. And one time I was at his house for Shabbos, and he forgot, and he wore it to shul. He was wearing a cardinal cap in shul, which was pretty funny. But basically, they're exactly the same. They're just red. So let's discuss.
Do you have another sheet here?
I do. I have more sheets. There's.
Let me put a chair over there.
Here, Howie.
My sheet runneth over.
Oh, I have to sit next to you.
No, I'm going to sit over here. I don't want to.
You'll sit on the men's side.
Oh, it's a mechitza here. Do you know that shirt is so religious?
This happened totally naturally. It's
Harvey's
just part of your
here
basic
watch, sitting over here.
Religious inclinations.
It was very nice to be at the cemetery, by the way.
You were lucky.
Didn't kick me in.
He did, yeah. Yeah, that's right. He's been unveiling.
I didn't go over. I couldn't make it. I had to finish the car.
Okay. So why do we do that? This is part three. And next week we're going to start into, I think, issues that have to do with tefillah. So Nishmat Kolchai could be a possibility. I have to see exactly where we're going to structure it. But I didn't actually write the wrong thing down.
And as we get closer to Hanukkah, maybe we could learn about.
Hanukkah is also definitely a possibility. I think the Kol is doing actually a Hanukkah mini marathon of shiurim at the shul here.
Okay.
So there will be a lot of Hanukkah stuff happening here.
Okay.
But in any event, so we're going to start talking about kippot. A lot of people wear kippot today. The question is, as we always ask, where exactly did it come from? Where did this idea come from? Is this a mitzvah? Does it say somewhere in the Torah that men are supposed to wear kippah? So no, it doesn't say that anywhere. It doesn't say anywhere that there's a notion of head covering. In fact, if you look through Tanakh, usually a head covering is a sign of mourning. Somebody, like, you know, tears their clothes and wears something over their head. You see the description over and over and over again as a sign of mourning.
Sackcloth, right?
Sackcloth and ashes. But sackcloth and ashes and covering your head, doing like sort of wrapping, putting yourself with some sort of scarf or something, is really viewed as a sign of mourning a lot of the times when you find it in Tanakh. Certainly there is no mitzvah or no chiyuv particularly, at least directly, to do this. So where exactly did we get this idea from? Where does it come from? So we'll see, we'll look through the source. I brought a series of stories, sources in the Talmud, and what we're going to see here is that there is sort of like a religious component that's clear, and there's also a clear social component. There's a component that a people of a certain social standing used to cover their heads. That's what we'll find as we go through this. So if we look at the first source here, it's a series of stories about cases in the Talmud, in the Gemara, where people covered their heads. Le'olam de'lo shavi, ukagon de'kabil kohen ale. What is we're talking about? The background of the story here is that there's a mitzvah called Pidyon Haben. You're supposed to redeem the firstborn son, and you redeem the firstborn son from a kohen. And the halacha involves that you pay the kohen five silver coins, which is worth a certain amount of money, which, depending on how you understand it, is tied into the value of silver. So it always becomes very interesting today to figure out how much silver you really need to buy in order to have enough silver to do the pidyon. And it's always a complicated process of figuring it out. But the Gemara here is describing a case where the kohen will take something that's worth much less than five slime and accept it and say, for me, this is worth five slime. Even though it's not worth that for everybody, for me, it's worth that much. And the assumption is that we're talking about things which have relative value. So you could have something which for one person is worth very little, and for another person could be worth more. So you'll see an example in a moment. So we're talking about a case, whatever the background discussion was, where really this object which was accepted was not really worth 5 slime, but the Kohen accepted it as though it was. Kiha de Rav Kahana, like the story of Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana, as his name implies, was a Kohen. Shakil Sudra mi bei pidyon aben. He accepted a cloth, like a cloth that you could use to tie up your head, like a turban, in a pidyon haben situation. Amar le lididi chazeli chamesh slime. So he said to the father, to the person, whoever was giving him the money, it's worth to me. This is worth 5 silver coins. It's worth the same. Amar Rav Ashi, lo amran ela kagon Rav Kahana, de gavra rabahu umibai le sudra reshe. So Rav Ashi said, this is only possible, not any Kohen. I am also a Kohen. I couldn't, we have other Kohanim here. I couldn't, I don't know if anyone else is a Kohen. So, oh wow, okay, so lots of Kohanim happening. So I don't know if the gentlemen wear turbans. I don't wear a turban, so I could not accept a cloth as being worth a lot of money. For me, it's a piece of fabric. But for Rav Kahana, since he was, like the Gemara concludes, a gavra rabba, a great person, umibai le sudra reshe, and therefore he needed to have he wore a thing on his head, some kind of headdress. So this cloth was worth more to him than to the average person. The average person here has a cloth, sees a cloth, he sees this piece of clothing, which for him is critical. So you see from here two things. There were people who wore things on their wore head coverings consistently, and we're talking about a person of a certain social standing. It's not clear if it's because he was a great rabbi, or because maybe in Babylon at the time, you know, if you were an important person in the community, that's how you dressed when you're in public. It was part of a official or appropriate dress. But that's the idea. We see here but it's not. It is not the case that everybody was doing this. Certain people did it, and certain people did not. And just to clinch this, I quoted here the Rashi from the story, the Gavra Rabahu. He was a great person, velo azil begilu yarosh, and therefore he never went out with his head bare, bareheaded. Bareheaded, a hyphenated word or one word? That's a good question. But he never went out with his head uncovered. Okay, so that's one source where we see that people were covering their heads.
So the English then is missing the word not.
Oh, he does go about with... That is a very unfortunate typo. Yes.
Okay.
He does not go about with his head uncovered.
Okay.
Yes.
So I have a question.
Yes.
So if he, Rav Kahana, was getting a cloth, like from everyone having a baby, or is this like one time, the first time, and then he never took it off? Was it like
The idea is, at this particular, if I understand correctly here, at this particular Pidyon HaBen, the person offered him a cloth, and he took the cloth.
Never before.
Maybe not. Maybe it happened regularly, but maybe not. And this was acceptable for him because for him, relatively speaking, this had a lot of value, more value than for an average person who didn't use it to cover their head. That seems to be the idea. So the third source we have here is another story, which is very interesting. Mishtabeach le Rav Chizda le Rav Huna bidder Rav Hamnuna. So Rav Chizda, that's a lot of names. Rav Huna was like a leading rabbi of the time. Rav Chizda really promoted, he praised this other rabbi named Rav Hamnuna, and he told Rav Huna how what a great person he was. Okay, Da'adam Gadol, he said he was a great person. Amar le, so Rav Huna said, great, k'sheyavo liyadecha, heviyuhu liyadi. If he's such a great person, I want to meet him. When he comes to you next, when he visits you, please bring him to me. Ki ata, chazye de lo parisudra. When he came, when Rav Hamnuna came, this great rabbi, he saw, Rav Huna saw that he was not wearing anything on his head. There was nothing on his head. Amar le, mai tama lo parisat sudra. So he said, he asked him, what's the reason why you're not wearing anything on your head? Amar le, dilo nasivna. He said, because I'm not married. And the custom is that the custom was, apparently, at a certain point, that if you weren't married, then you didn't act in the way, you didn't put this, you didn't put anything on your head. There is a sort of parallel custom that happens today in shul.
Talit.
Right, with the talit, which is that unmarried men, unmarried boys, even if they're wearing a talit for whatever reason, you never hood yourself with the talit. You wear people wear a hat if they wear a hat, but you never put it over your head. And after a person gets married, they do.
Svardin.
puts the talit on children.
All right. So then I have to, yeah, they have, I don't know what the story is with the hooding in Sephardi shuls. I know that after bar mitzvah people are wearing a talit, but even if you are wearing a talit, we're talking specifically about the putting it over your head. Do in Sephardi shuls, do younger boys put the talit over their head? Could be. Okay, this could be the suggestion. No, I'm not sure. I'm not familiar. But it could be this just an Ashkenazi. But I'm just pointing out that concept still exists.
The Bavavers, the men don't wear shtraimels until they're married.
Right. That's another parallel. That Hasidim very often do not wear a shtraimel on Shabbos, the big furry hat, until they get married. Okay, so he told him, I'm not married, so that's why my head's uncovered. Adrin hula pei mine. So Rav Huna turned his face away from him. Amarle chazi delo chazit lehu la'ape ad dinisavt. So he said, and then he told him, see to it that I do not see your face until you are married. What exactly was the reason for this reaction is not 100% clear, and it's not really our topic now. But what I wanted to point, I mean, it might be, but what I wanted to point out is, you see from here also a custom that there was this rabbi. He was a great rabbi. Everybody talked about how amazing he was, and he didn't cover his head. He showed up to learn. He showed up to meet somebody. He didn't cover his head. That was apparently true in the Gemara.
Maybe he took up from women.
I think he was reformed.
That must have been it. So that's point number two. We see that not only is this a notion, something that applies to important people in society, but that there were various customs. For example, that unmarried men did not cover their head. Okay, a third source. You could go on like this forever. There's lots of sources, but I'm just trying to bring some interesting ones. This is also a very interesting one. The Gemara here is discussing the fact that the Jewish people are not bound by mazel, by astrology in this case, right? The assumption of in the Gemara was that there is something called astrology. You can read the stars and predict what's going to happen in the future. And this is a Gemara which goes through several stories showing examples of how Jews are not affected by astrology. This is one of them. That, you know, even though astrologically a certain thing should be true, Jews and through their relationship to God are not affected. We saw it referenced a little bit in last week's parsha, where Avram is taken out and shown the stars. You should look at the stars, and Rashi says the hint that God was telling him was that you saw in astrology that you're not supposed to have any children, but that's not how this works. You know, I'm beyond astrology. So Mid Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak Nami. Ein mazel Yisrael. We see from the story of Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak also that there is no concept of astrological predictions or being bound by astrology for Israel. De'ei made Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, Amri le Kaldai, Chaldeans, I don't know. These are people who are known for their astrological predictions. They told the mother of Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, Brich ganvahava, your son is going to be a thief. That's what they, based on what we see, your son's going to be a thief. So what did she do? Lo shavakte gluye reshes. She never let him go anywhere with his head uncovered. Amrale, kasi reshech, kihechi detihave alach emta dishmaya. So she told him, cover your head, so that the fear of heaven will always be upon you. Ubai rachame, and pray for mercy. Lo havayada amaykam. So she told him this, and he said, okay, well, fine, I guess I'll cover my head. I'll pray for mercy. But he didn't know why she was saying this. She didn't tell him about this prediction that he was supposed to be a thief. And apparently everything was going fine. And one fine day, yom achad, one day, yativ kagaris tute dikle, he was sitting under a date palm, a palm tree, and learning, repeating his studies. Nafa glima ilave, so his turban or his claw, whatever was on his head, slipped off. Dali Eine Chaze Ledikla, and suddenly he looked up and saw he was sitting under a palm tree, which was not his palm tree. Sali Kupaske Lekibura Beshene, and he went up and he was so Alme Yitzre, his inclination, his evil inclination overpowered him. He climbed immediately up the tree, and apparently, I never attempted to detach palms from a palm tree, dates from a palm tree, but he cut out the dates from the palm tree with his teeth and he was eating them. In other words, he all of a sudden could not stop himself from going up there and taking these things and eating them, which is a kind of theft. I'm not a kind of theft.
That's funny you said the Jewish people are not affected by astrology, because we know the story of Purim was affected. They drew lots. And then, of course, Paro saw that the person who was going to be the savior, and that's why they threw all the male babies into the water.
Right. So that That's
they
true.
Tried
so
to
there's,
undo us by.
Right. So, but it, yeah, it doesn't work, right? No. It's the same kind of idea. So we see here, aside from the fact that Jews are not affected by astrology, that this is a story which indicates, starts to indicate the sort of second rung here, which is we saw the first couple of cases, we're talking about great people who covered their head, which could be for any number of reasons. Now this is more of a religious component. Why is this person covering his head? Why is Rav Nachum Rietzka covering his head? So he'll have fear of heaven above him. He'll have fear of heaven upon him. There's a notion that if you cover your head, then you could be conscious of the fact that God is involved in your life at all times.
Or protection from your Yetzer Hara too.
Correct, apparently as well. But maybe that the point is that through your consciousness of the fact that God is there, you are not tempted to do things.
I thought that was the idea behind Tzitzit.
Could also be. This is an important concept. Mm-hmm. And there is a notion of like surrounding yourself in mitzvot all the time. You have the mezuzah on the door, and there's all kinds of reminders about God that are sort of surrounding you at all times.
Well, the Yiddish word for keeper, like yarmulke, would be yarei malka, like fear of.
Right. So that
Malach,
it's fascinating. Yeah, yarei malka. I read an article about kippot. So he went into a whole attempt to derive the etymology of the word yarmulke. So that was one option. And there's some other Turkish words that I don't remember. Yarma gap, which means half of a hat in Turkish. I don't know. But yes, that's definitely the most meaningful etymology, which is fear of God. Right? So we see here, and this last source reiterates this. This is the source which is discussed in terms of the halacha, so we'll use it moving forward. Amar b'Yoshua ben Levi, asur la'adam shi'haleich arba amot b'koma zekufa. So that's very interesting, and it's not something which seems to, you know, we really think about in modern society. It's forbidden for a person to walk four amot with an upright posture. You shouldn't walk upright. You should be a little bit bent over. As a sign of humility. This is not something which, you know, is common practice, but you do find it in certain places. In the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch of Rabbi Shlomo Gansfried, he describes this, how exactly does this work, and where you should look, and how you should orient yourself. But anyway, so be that as it may, Shenemar Melo Kol Aretz Kavod, the whole world is filled with his glory, God's glory is everywhere, and therefore it's befitting to walk in a sort of humble way. Rav Huna Bredi Rav Yehoshua Lo Maske Arba Amot Begilui Rosh, and Rav Huna, the son of Rav Yehoshua, would not go four Amot with his head uncovered, bareheaded. Amar Shechina Lamala Miroshi, because he said the Shechina, the divine presence, the presence of God, is above my head. Okay, so we see two streams sort of have emerged in the Gemara. One is that wearing a head covering is some sort of sign of recognition of God's presence, and one is that certain people in the community used to wear it. It's very clear, or it relatively seems clear, that not everybody was doing this in the times of the Talmud. So the question is, how exactly does the halacha emerge? What is the halacha? And here there's an enormous debate, which leads to some of the very interesting historical elements here. There was a very big debate where one side said, absolutely, you have to wear a kippah all the time. There's no question about wearing a kippah. It must be done all the time. And the other side basically said, no, you know, there's no necessity, there's no mitzvah. It's called midat chasidut. It's something that, you know, if you're a very holy person, that's something that you do. But normal people, there's no need, there's no obligation to do this regularly. And this debate was so intense that there was actually censoring of various, I'll show you some, that's why there's pictures on the second, on the last page. But there's censoring in things that happened in texts and censoring that happened in pictures, where each side sort of tried to, occasionally got so intense that people like rewrote things to sort of fit with their position that you should be wearing a kippah at all times or you shouldn't. I don't know why.
There's a book out, I forget who wrote it, and Shapiro, I think.
Oh, Mark Shapiro, right. I heard
and,
it today.
And there's a picture of the Lubavitcher Rebbe with his head not covered.
Oh yeah, I heard about that. Yeah. I didn't see the picture. Yeah. Don't worry.
He photoshopped to put it. Yeah.
Who was the debate between? Was it between Hillel and Shammai, or that was?
No, this is later than Hillel and Shammai. This is like much beyond in terms of the Shulchan Aruch. We'll see how this emerges, and we'll see who some of the players are and how this worked out. So the emergence of the halakha starts with the tour. The tour is the first sort of system, I mean, not really the first, but in terms of the structure of the Shulchan Aruch that we have now, he was the first codifier, and he has a bunch of references to covering your head, and we'll see what people infer. The first one is that he quotes this final piece of the Gemara that we just talked about in terms of the morning rituals that you do in the morning when you get ready for the day. A person, v'yichaseroshu k'di'ita na mihatam rav huna lo azil daladamot begilu harosh amar shechina ma'ala meroshi. So he seems to be saying here, you should cover your head, just like we saw here that Rav Huna, the son of Rabbi Yeshua, he doesn't quote that part, but Rav Huna would never go four amot with his head uncovered. Okay, so that seems pretty straightforward. But we find indications that seem to imply he was not assuming people were always covering their heads. So for example, in the halachas of tzitzit, in the second last source on the page here, he says, we're talking about when you put it on and you wrap it around your head and you make a bracha. So he says, machzir beit tzitziot lefanav u beit tzitziot la'acharav, you put two of the fringes, two of the tzitziot in front and two behind, shiyeh mesuvev b'mitzvah. He should be surrounded by mitzvah. Umachaser rosho shelo yeh begilui rosh veyivarch litatef betzitzit. And then you should cover your head with the talit so that your head isn't bare; it's not uncovered. And then you make the bracha on the tzitzit. Your head isn't uncovered. What happened to his kippah? It doesn't sound here like this person is wearing a kippah. It sounds like he's not wearing a kippah. He comes to put on a talit. He puts it over his head, and he's telling you, you should make sure to put it over your head, because it's not appropriate maybe to make a bracha with your bare head. But it sounds like this person was not wearing a kippah before him. Final example of this, Katav Bal HaTrumot, Mikan Yesh Lomot, Shetzarech Adam LeEzor, Ezor B'Shat Tefillah. This is talking about preparations for Tefillah, which we'll maybe touch upon again at the end. A person is supposed to prepare themselves with special clothes and gird themselves, even if they're already wearing a belt. And this is the basis for the practice that many people do, especially Chassidim, of wearing a gartel. Fine. And you should cover your head. Before you pray, you should make sure to cover your head. Why do you have to make sure? Your head should be always covered. You should be wearing a kippah. So apparently not. You should cover. He says you should cover your head before you go to pray, before you go to daven. So this, you can already see, is the makings for a big debate. The Shulchan Aruch says, Asur leilech b'koma zakufa, it's forbidden. He actually says this. It's not something, maybe we can talk about it a different time. It totally fell out of practice. It's forbidden to walk with an upright posture, and you should not walk four amot with your head uncovered. So he takes the position, people interpret this different ways, but it's understood, he takes the position that you must always, you are always supposed to have your head uncovered. That's or funny. Covered,
I've
not
seen
uncovered.
Some older rabbis who walk hunched over, and I thought it was because of their old age, but maybe they're doing it on purpose.
Maybe. I don't know. Okay. Fine. So the Gra here is the other side. The Vilna Gaon, which is not a person you would expect to be, I mean, because now we associate like wearing a kippah. Like, who's going to argue against wearing a kippah? But the Vilna Gaon is one of the ones that comes out very strongly against this practice. Yeah. And he says, we have it here, people think that, I mean, he's commenting on this point in the tour of wrapping your, putting the talit over your head before you make the bracha. He says, Mishum di'itufo lehit palel, amar shi'chaser rosho, since he's supposed to wrap his, you know, put something around his head when he prays, put something over his head when he prays, it says that he should cover his head. The af al gav de kfar katav hatur b'simin bet miksut b'simin bet miksut harosh, even though we already saw the tour mentions when you're waking up in the morning to cover your head, hatam ba'akrai, that's only temporary umimidot chasidut, that's something that very holy people do, ad shitatef, until he covers his head when he's getting ready to pray. V'chan katav midina. And here, when we see that he seems to be indicating that you're not covering your head before you start to pray, here is where he's saying the real fundamental halacha, which is that you don't have to. V'gam ha'shekatav v'masechet sofrim, whatever it says there, Sheyesh Omrim, some people say that it's forbidden to mention the names of God with the head that's uncovered. That also isn't really true. It's also Midat Chasidut. You can even mention the names of God with your head uncovered. And he says the basic rule is this, Klala Demilta. The basic rule is, Ein Iser Klal Barosh Megula. There's absolutely no prohibition of going with an uncovered head. Le'olam, ever. Rak Lifne Gdolim, if you maybe you're in front of important people. V'chen Be'et HaTfila. And also when you're praying, because then you're also in front of somebody important, so you should do it. Az Nachon Adavar Mitzad HaMusar. Then it's ethically correct to do this. V'shar Hayom, the rest of the day is only for Kedoshim She'omdim Lifne Hashem Tamid. If they're holy people who are constantly conscious of the presence of God in their lives, so then it's appropriate to put a kippah onto your head, but otherwise there's absolutely no requirement. So these are the two sides of this bitter kind of debate. Yeah?
When you were researching Shema last time, did it say anything, because I know during the day, but the nighttime Shema, like about covering the head then, like does it say, bring in any sources from that?
I mean, I saw some things mentioned here in terms of somebody waking up. There's a whole debate about if you're it's the middle of the night and you have to say a bracha or you have to do something, can you cover your head with your hand? This is like a thing that you see people covering their head with their hand, and there is support for that and not, but I didn't see anything really linked to the Shema. Okay. There is, but this basically ends up being these two sides of the debate. One side says you must wear it all the time. There's no question. It has to be there. This is the sign of a religious Jewish man, is that you wear a kippah to indicate your consciousness, constant consciousness of the presence of God. The other side says, absolutely not. We have no source. If you look through the Talmud, it's clear people didn't do it. I cut out the middle of the grab, but he's very verbose here. It's not often that he does this, and he quotes source after source after source. You see here, not everybody wearing it. You see there, not everybody was wearing it. All over the place, we see not everybody was wearing it, and so there's really no requirement to do so. You do it at certain times when you pray, it's appropriate. Otherwise, it's for very holy people to do. Okay, so I wanted to touch a little bit on the controversy because it was just so interesting. As I mentioned before, this turned into a huge, very bitter debate. And you see, and not so bitter, but I mean, you see times when stuff gets edited. Case in point, if you look at the pictures on the last page, these are two, this is a portrait. It happens sometimes that people publish books and they put their portrait in the book. I don't know why they did that, but I guess they wanted people to see what the person wrote it. Anyway, this is Rabbi Moshe Chayfetz. He was an Italian rabbi who lived. I wrote down his dates. I mean, this is the book was published in 1710, but he lived from 1633 to 1711, and he's most famous for his book, Melechet Machshevet, which is a commentary on the Torah. And he published this book, and in the publication of the book, he included a portrait of himself. And as you can see, in this portrait, it's Shai Agnon, I saw somewhere, mentioned how shocked he was when he saw this picture of a rabbi when he was a kid with no beard and really long hair and no kippah. There's no kippah. You can maybe, you know, I was looking at it, but really there's no kippah. Apparently, if you see it in a bigger format, it's even more clear. He's not wearing kippah. Okay.
Something around his neck, he looks like a priest.
I don't know what that is. Some guy, if you go to, 17th century Italy, then that was all the rage. They had pink ones and green ones and whatever you want. That's what they wore. So this is a picture of Rabbi Moshe Chayfetz from his book, and this is from the edition which was published in 1710. And you see that whoever published this had no compunction of including this original, aside from the fact that he made a portrait of himself, which if, you know, in the 17th century, it's not like you take a picture. It's a big deal to make a portrait. If you're going to make a portrait, it's probably going to be however you want to be displayed to the world. And he had no compunction about not wearing kippah. And in fact, in Italy, this is still the case. I've never been to Italy, but my father has told me that when he went there, the Jews in Rome still don't really wear kippah during the day. So you'll see a guy, somebody walking on the street, big tzitzis flowing all over the place, no kippah. And then he comes into shul and he puts on a kippah, and it's not an issue of not being identified as a Jew. It's really just because that is the minhag in Rome. That's what they do. They don't wear a kippah. A lot of Sephardi countries also, people do not wear a kippah. We'll see that again soon during the main course of the day. So he had no problem with it. Later, they republished this book in a new edition in 1860. And you'll notice two things. Oh, the bottom part got cut off. That's unfortunate. You know, first of all, this is clearly not the same. Someone redrew this picture, right? I mean, I'm not an artist, but it's clear that somebody redrew this picture, and they changed it in two ways. One was to make him look a lot older. His hair is now gray, and he's got creases in his face and whatever. And the other is that he's wearing a kippah, very prominently. So the fact that his hair turned gray all of a sudden was an interesting historical note. At the bottom, it got cut off, I guess, when I printed it, but it said, of the original version, it said, this is Moshe Chayfetz Po Batmuna, et, with the little apostrophe marks, ben mem aleph hey, apostrophe marks in there, shana, ben mea shana, et ben mea shana, or shnat et ben mea shana. So it said that he was 100 years old. Ben mea shana means 100 years old. Very clearly, this is not a picture of a person who was 100 years old. I don't know if this is a picture of a person who's 100 years old, but really what it meant was Mem Aleph Hey, it meant the numerical value of Mem Aleph Hey, which is 40 and 1 and 5 and 46. He was 46 when he published the book, and as a cute thing, they said Ben Me'ah Shana. He's Mem Aleph Hey years old. So in the original picture, so when they republished it, they didn't figure out the joke. And they made him look, tried to make him look like he was 100 years old. And that's why it says on top, Ben Mea Shana Anochi Hayom. Okay, fine, that's cute.
But they kept the hair long.
They did keep the hair long. And they did keep him without a beard.
Yeah.
But they did put a very big kippah on his head. So you see, what some people point out here is that this is, I don't know if it's censoring or whatever, but whoever printed the book the second time, it's not clear if it's the printers or they feel pressure, but there is clearly a pressure felt to not have a picture of the author of the book without a kippah. That's one example of the kind of censoring which occurred. Another example, which is interesting also in terms of the historical point that we see, is if you go back to the second page here, this is a tshuva from the Melamed Lehoil, who was Rabbi David Tzvi Hoffman. He lived from 1843 to 1921, and he was born in Slovakia, and later he moved to Germany. And in his time in Germany, he had interactions with Rabbi Hirsch, Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch, who had a big community there, Neo-Orthodoxy, as it is called. So he wrote a book of responsa. People asked him different questions, and he answered them. And the question here is, we can read it, I don't know if we read it in English, but question, is it permissible to take an oath in non-Jewish courts bareheaded? So you go into court, you know, I haven't lived in Germany in the 1800s, but if I had and I went to court, they make you take off your hat. You're not supposed to wear it. It's not appropriate. You know, it's the opposite. You don't wear a hat as a sign of respect, as we'll see in a second. You take off your hat as a sign of respect. So if you're in court and you have to take an oath, if you're a Jew, they make you take an oath in the name of God, on the Bible, however they're making you take the oath. And the question is, are you allowed to do that, to take that oath without a kippah on? Is that appropriate? That was the question that was posed to him. So he said, I don't understand what the problem is. Today, amongst the Hungarian rabbis, they're extremely strict with regard to covering one's head. But, however, the Gra, as we already saw, the Vilna Gaon, in his glosses, notes that there's no prohibition even to say God's name bareheaded, and that covering one's head is a midat chasidut. Fine, and this is an interesting historical note, in the school in Frankfurt am Main, Rav Hirsch established, part of the things that he did in Germany was to establish a school system where they would study secular studies and also Jewish studies together. And he had elementary schools and he had high schools and he had a yeshiva, I think, at some point open, if it was his lifetime or later. So he was the head of the school. And in the school in Frankfurt am Main that was established by Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch, where I taught for 2.5 years, the students sat bareheaded for secular studies. And this is not an issue. Only during Judaic studies did they cover their heads, and this was done under the direction of Rabbi Hirsch. And he adds, the first time I came to meet with Rabbi Hirsch, with my hat on my head, right, he came to meet him, Rabbi Hirsch said to me that it is proper respect to remove one's hat when visiting an important personage. Rabbi Hirsch explained that if one of the non-Jewish teachers would see me with my hat on while speaking with the director of the school, they would assume that I'm lacking the proper respect. So he came to meet Rabbi Hirsch. Rabbi Hirsch said, you better take off your hat because people will think that you don't have any manners and you don't know how to act properly here. So as we see here in Germany, Rabbi Hirsch had no compunction about having people sit bareheaded for secular studies, and also following the basic, you know, conduct of the country, which is that it's appropriate to take off your hat in certain circumstances. We'll see this is very at odds with something we're going to see in a minute. But what's interesting historically about this is this tshuva appeared in the first printed edition of the Melamed Lehoil. It's also in the electronic edition that I have now. But in subsequent editions later, if you turn to that page, it was blank at a certain point. Because somebody, whoever was printing it, could not abide by this perspective. Okay, so let's just recap what we've seen so far. So far we've seen that as far as the Talmud is concerned, there's a notion of wearing a head covering if you're an important person. There's also a religious element to it. We saw that in terms of the way the halacha emerged, there's a big debate. Some people say you always have to wear it, and some people say you basically never have to wear it. We saw that how heated this debate became in terms of the willingness people had to really push their perspectives. What I want to look at now is just a few more reasons. What reasons? Today, everybody, you know, it's common practice that people wear a kippah. Not, you know, all the time, but people wear a kippah. So what further reasons do we have? One reason that we saw was this notion that you're recognizing that God is above you. What other reasons can we find for this halacha? So one reason which I saw was fascinating is a hygienic reason. I think it's hygienic. The exact translation here is not clear. There's a pasuk in Kohelet that says, this is the bottom of the second page, the last source, be'atzaltayim yimach hamikra. The ceiling or the beam, the ceiling sags through slothfulness, through laziness. Because if a person is too lazy to cover his head properly, then the ceiling will sag and he will be nasa romtikus, which is a word I could not find a translation for. I'm not even really sure what language it is. It's probably Latin, but I don't know. Perush nizila. Nizila may mean like a runny nose or some sort of leaking stuff coming out of you. It's a hygienic idea. So I'm not exactly sure what to make of this precisely. And this source goes on to say you should make sure your whole body is covered and your feet are covered because there's hygienic reasons for it. Otherwise, you'll get... It sounds like it's saying if you don't cover your head, you'll get a head cold. A little bit. That's a little bit what it sounds like it's saying. So you can do with that whatever you like. That's one reason. The other reason, which I think is much more relevant today, because in terms of the way that things have developed, certainly in North America and in Israel, there's a notion of social conduct. We saw already that Rav Hirsch was very happy to say we should follow the social norms of the day, and if it's considered respectful to take off your head covering when you meet someone important, then you should do that. You shouldn't feel any compunction. But there is the opposite push. There's a notion in general in halacha called chukat akum. You following in the customs of the non-Jews where you live. And this is usually the basis for this, or the reasons why we don't do certain things, are because there are activities which we're scared may not consciously now be based in some sort of idolatrous practice, but originally maybe they were. And a lot of times we only say this about superstition. Someone has a fox... a rabbit's tail that they tie on their shirt or something. Whatever. Things which are done for super... You throw salt over your shoulder. Right? Mm-hmm. Things are done for superstitious reasons, so there's a concern that if we don't know the exact origin, maybe this is something that originated in Avodah Zarah, and we're actually, you know, shouldn't be. You're knocking on wood. That's not good. Knocking on wood is not good. People do it, right? But it's that kind of thing. You say knock on wood, I don't know exactly how it works. You're knocking on the wood of the cross. So it's not... It's not a good reference for Jews to be making, religiously speaking.
We just have the red...
The red string. Oh, the red string is a whole story by itself.
There's something to add to the...
Yeah, there we go. Okay, I can put it on. But one day we'll talk about the red strings. Oh, man. Okay. Okay, so the societal concern. So we see there are those who hold that wearing a kippah, since it has become the practice... Since non-Jews have the practice to not wear a head covering, so to not wear a head covering somehow becomes part of following in the customs of the non-Jews.
So when did it become a headscarf turban to the cap?
Ah, so when did that happen? Presumably, I mean, the simplest historical explanation is when people stopped wearing turbans. If you live somewhere where nobody wears a turban, you look really funny if you start wearing a turban. So nobody would do that. People wore hats for a long time. If I have a minute at the end, I will talk about hats briefly. But there's a lot of sources about hats. The fedora was only invented in the 50s, 40s, I don't know, 20s, whatever. So, you know, to say that there's an old tradition to wear fedora is not accurate. Okay, whatever. Maybe we'll get to that in a moment. But anyway, the Taz is the one who makes this argument. He says, could just read it in English, it appears to me that going bareheaded is absolutely, he's discussing, is it because of this? Is it because of that? He's discussing the sources we've seen so far. He thinks it's prohibited for a different reason. Namely, that since the non-Jewish custom today to take off one's hat immediately after sitting down, or it is the non-Jewish custom, this is included and do not follow in their customs. Don't follow. All the more so with regards to this custom, which has a positive reason since covering the head teaches fear of heaven. See, the Taz throws in this notion that, you know, that if you're, you know, not, if you're covering, if you decide to suddenly take off your hat and go bareheaded, whenever you enter a room, whenever you meet somebody, whatever, this fits in with the customs of non-Jews, and therefore it should not be done. I don't know if, you know, this was really accepted in terms of this technical application, because it's a really serious thing, b'chukoteim lo telechu, but what you do find is a similar kind of emphasis in other poskim that discuss wearing a kippah, much more contemporary. I have here one tshuva from Rav Moshe Feinstein and one tshuva from Rav Avadya Yosef in Israel, and both of them point out the same point, even if it's not an issue of following the customs of non-Jews, but if we're talking about societies where wearing a kippah, you know, religious Jews, it's become like a ubiquitous custom. Orthodox Jews, whatever, however you want to exactly slice it, has become a ubiquitous custom to wear it, so we may be extending beyond, you can talk about something as a midat chasidut, something that holy people do, if that's really true, if it's something that holy people do. But it's something that everybody does, then there is a notion in halacha, minhag Yisrael kahalacha, whatever everybody's doing becomes binding, if only because, if you don't do that, you show that you're sort of dissenting from everybody else. It's not good to pull away and try and move in a different direction than the group, because it shows that you don't agree with everybody, it shows that you're not whatever. Poresh min hatzibur, someone separates themselves from the community. So this kind of social pressure, I think today, is probably the most binding reason that people wear kippah. So we'll see.
Or in France, I guess, it would be the opposite, the security pressure or the threat pressure.
Oh, obviously. I mean, right. If this is all we're talking about, and that's the reason why you're wearing it, so then even for much less than that, it can go away. So, for example, there's a big discussion about if you work in a workplace where wearing a kippah is going to put you at a serious disadvantage, or it's going to scare away, whatever, so do you have to wear a kippah or not? That's something that people today, it's a common question. If somebody works in a big office, if they work in a firm or something where this is going to be a problem potentially. So there are those who say you can, Rav Moshe Feinstein is one of them, who says you can not wear a kippah in those circumstances. Because really it's not a lot that's telling you. So let's see what he says here. He says at the end of the day he's talking about a practice, a discussion, which comes up at some point, that the kippah should be visible from all directions. But he says you don't really need to. Therefore, in practice, whoever wants to be stringent and follow the view of Rabbi Shlomo Kluger, who suggested this, must cover most of his head, which is accomplished by most hats and bigger kippah. However, fundamentally, there is no need to be concerned with his view, since he is a lone opinion, a da'at yachid, and especially since he's dealing with midat chasidut. Right? Within this question of acting like a specially holy person, he says, and there's two ways to do it, and the better way is to have most of your head covered. Even though today, this is the key point, it has become the practice for all Jews to wear kippot, and therefore we should consider not wearing one like a prohibition. Okay, so this is the point which I wanted to highlight here. He says, okay, there's this notion of midat chasidut, but today, if everybody's doing it, and this is the practice, and this symbolizes, to a certain extent, when you put on a kippah, it has a lot of symbolic weight. means that I have certain beliefs, it means I'm part of a certain community. So perhaps in that case, not wearing one becomes like some kind of prohibition of separating away from the community, of trying to show that you're different or whatever. So that could be a even more problematic. So he says the practice has never been to be more stringent than what is indicated in the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch, that you don't have to cover your whole head. Therefore, if one's head is covered in such a way that he is referred to as having his head covered, which is very vague language, because I have no idea what that means, and you can look today, there's all kinds and shapes and sizes of kippot, from ones that are this big to ones that are this big, and have little straps for babies that tie it to their head. Whatever, they can be seen from all different in all different kinds of ways. He's permitted to walk in the street and even to make a blessing, like many people do, and they should not, and people should not be considered, these people should not be considered as those who seek leniencies, God forbid. But his point is, what I wanted to get out of this is, you see, he's sensitive to the fact that since this became a sort of normative practice, everybody does this, this has a, that itself has weight. That itself is a reason why you should be doing this. And we find this also in Rabbi Ovadia Yosef's discussions of things in Israel. So in Israel, he also goes through this whole discussion. He spells this out actually much more clearly. He's also addressing the fact that in Israel is a sort of hodgepodge of different people from all over the world with all kinds of different customs. And there are many Sephardi communities where they simply do not wear kippot most of the day. It's just not the case. They wore them when they ate, they wore them when they prayed, when they learned, but otherwise there was no kippa wearing. It was not a thing. I lived for a while on I was in yeshiva in Beit Shemesh, and in Beit Shemesh there's a, in the middle, if you're familiar with, there's like Beit Shemesh, and then there's two suburbs called Ramat Beit Shemesh. In between them, there's a moshav. The moshav was originally, a lot of the land for some of those suburbs were taken out of this moshav called Zanoach, which is inhabited now mostly by Sephardi Jews from, I think, Morocco and Syria. And I went to my yeshiva that I went to after high school was in that moshav. It was an American place, but it was there. And a lot of people there still didn't always wear, especially the older people, did not always wear a kippah. They would walk around with their kippah, and they put it on when they come into shul. And other times, you see, that's what it was. That's what they did. So, but Rav Ovadia Yosef is addressing this community as well. These people are coming from somewhere, and now they're coming to Israel, where wearing a kippah for religious Jews is ubiquitous. So he describes this in nice detail. Mikol makom nira shebikisui harosh bezmanenu yesh tam yoter mibidat chasidut. It appears that in our day, there's another reason, additional reason to covering your head beyond midat chasidut, beyond this notion that God is above you at all times. Ki yadua shezeh darkam shel hachofshim porkei ol Torah mitzvah lelechet begilui harosh. It's known that the way of the free people who cast off the yoke of the Torah and mitzvot, they are the ones that go with their head uncovered. V'yish heker miyuchad bein oved elokim la'asher lo avdo. There is a clear distinction, a clear physical manifestation between a person who is serving God, a person who decides not to serve God, ayideh kippah shel harosh, by means of, you see, the person with the kippah, this is a person who is religious. Shadatiyim nizharim lelechet tamid b'kisui rosh. The religious people are careful to always go with their head covered. The hafcha kippah shel rosham, lesemel la'adam dati, the kippah which is on your head, in addition to whatever else, hygiene, religious ideology, etc., or religious sense of God, has transformed into a symbol of a religious person. That's what it is. If you put on the kippah, you're saying, I'm a religious Jew. That's what you're saying. Shemora shemayim alav, who has fear of God upon him. Va'af al pi sheish ktsat datiim shebao michutz la'aretz v'nagu lelechet begilui harosh. Even though there are some religious people who came from abroad outside of Israel, and they had the practice to go with their head uncovered, kemin hagam b'chutz la'aretz, like they used to do, ein amela miyuta de miyuta. This is a very minor view. They certainly don't make up the majority. So he's ready to say that, similar to Moshe Feinstein said in America, that the fact that everybody's wearing a kippah turns it into a sort of obligatory practice. So that's basically the discussion that there is to be had. There are, you know, I found an extraordinary amount of academic material about kippah. I found a master's thesis about the history of the yarmulke in America in the 20th century.
Oh, really?
It was like 45 pages long. And I'll say the same thing I said last week. I'm very grateful that somebody sat down to write it, because there's no way I could have spent the amount of time it must have taken to research
that.
You
probably got a D.
Was it at YU or somewhere?
No, it was at this, I think, City University of New York.
Oh, really?
History department. The history of, yeah, there's a lot of people that have written about this. This is more or less the idea of the kippah, as we've traced it from the Talmud and outwards. The other men's head covering, which is of note, is hats. There's not as much, this, I mean, the truth is I couldn't find good, we have to wait a few years before there's a good academic write-up about hats. But the some of the basic ideas which feed into this is there's a notion of preparing yourself to pray, hikon, to prepare yourself to face God, and part of that notion involves dressing up nicely. So that's why a lot of people wear a jacket, and some people argue that you have to wear a hat. And the other basis for it is that there is a concept that when you pray, you're supposed to be be'ituf, with your head covered from all sides, and that the hat accomplishes this. But certainly a large component of what's going on with hats is again a social factor. Obviously now nobody wears hats in society, right? So you can't say that you're wearing a hat because you're dressing nicely, you want to be, you know, present yourself in a certain way. They don't look bad, but nobody wears them. So the idea again is that this certain type of dress has come to symbolize a certain kind of religious ideology. Here it's a little bit more nuanced, because it's not all religious Jews that are doing this. It's some religious Jews of certain persuasions and certain perspectives who are doing it within the community, but I think that also has a lot to do with the decision to do that. Again, I don't have anything much more concrete to say. Okay. Yeah.
There's a YouTube video of an Israeli talk show, and it's explaining to new immigrants to Israel who aren't Jewish the different aspects of Israeli society. And so it's done in English, even though it's a Hebrew talk show. And it's comedy-based. But one of the segments is explaining what different kippot represent within Israel.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And it's quite interesting.
Okay. So I hope this was interesting, even if it's not 100% applicable to everybody that's here.
Wearing a hat.
Yeah, I'm wearing a hat.
Okay. What about sleep?
I'm talking about kippahs. Yeah,
some men wear sleep kippahs. Like the
there are sleep kippahs. That's true.
Excuse me, I just popped
the like the Ku Klux Klan sort of thing.
But
like a cap. Like,
yeah, if you only wore a kippah, this the daven.
Yeah.
So you wore a kippah to say a motzi by dinner. Would you take it off and eat the dinner bareheaded?
So a lot of people, I saw a lot of people describe that they would dafka leave it on when they ate.
Okay.
Eating was one of these cases. But there's every possible combination under the sun.
Kiddush.
Some people wore it when they ate, some people wore it only for bracha, some people wore it only in shul, some people wore it only here, and then in all kinds of permutations that you can imagine somebody did it at some point. Okay, so thank you very much for coming.
Very good.
And we'll continue next week with issues pertaining to tefillah.